What's up, everyone? In case you haven't heard, Blue Wire Studios just dropped their first original podcast, Golden Goal. The show gives you 10-minute episodes all about soccer legends and the moments that made them. Whether you're just learning about soccer for the first time or a diehard fan, this podcast is great for everyone. The final two episodes are live right now, or binge the entire season to learn about your favorite soccer stars. Check out Blue Wire's Golden Goal, available anywhere you listen to podcasts. To another episode of Little Legends Podcast. I am your host, Blevins. With me, as always, is Boop. What's up, buddy?
Dude, we got a straight harmony there at the end.
I don't cut it off because I can't go longer. I cut it off because it's probably the most annoying thing in the world for at least 60% of the audience.
If there was an award for I turn this off because the beginning sucked, We probably win. But if you make it past the initial screeching, I think there is a moderately capable podcast.
There's a marginally listenable podcast to be had each and every single time. Yeah, man, it's we had some combos before the show about TFT in general. So we're going to be talking about TFT. Of course, we're going to be talking about the patch today. We got the new patch, patch 10.15. We're also going to talk about the state of the game at large and how we're feeling personally and what our perceptions of TFT, how the TFT community is taking it and whatnot at large here. So we've got a packed one. We got a packed one in.
We got it's more than a six pack. Even it is a full beer belly, philosophical discussions to be had moving forward, because I think we're in a little bit of a dark time right
Not just
now. A lot
of people.
A lot of people concerned. Still no spectator mode. Still no idea on when that's coming. But first, let's talk about the patch, because I think that kind of leads into the obvious transition that Mort and the team are moving into in response to the community's feedback a couple weeks ago. And I think it would be really good for us to talk about whether that's a good thing or not. And we'll talk about all of the deep details after the patch today, because we are going to be using that patch as an example for a lot of our talk.
Yes. So we're going to be getting into the patch. But first, everyone, make sure you're joining the Little Legends Podcast Discord, discord.me/Little Legends Podcast. We are currently doing game night, official game night, every other Tuesday. So the Tuesdays that we're doing the show, which is on patch weeks, you can come right here and watch the show live at twitch.tv/TheBlevins. And we will let you know on Twitter and all that. You can at LIL Legends Pod on Twitter. And the other Tuesday is going to be game night in the Discord. So join that. And then that's the official game night that we're going to be at. But if you want to do a game night on any given night, by all means, go ahead. I know there's a lot of folks that are still looking to do Fridays, and unfortunately, Boop and I can't come to Fridays, but that doesn't mean that you can't use the Discord and organize. I know there's a lot of folks, Ambam, Eric Thomas, Ice Blaze, the whole crew in there, always looking, to play on Friday. So if you're looking to play, there's the game night discussion, or the game night text channel in there. Just throw a message in there and let people know that you're playing or you're looking to play, or just, sometimes I just jump into a voice channel and people show up. So always fun if you're looking to do that. But without further ado, Boop, let's jump in to the 10.15 patch notes. So we'll start it off, as we always do, by reading the little intro that they gave, that they've given us. Welcome, galactic explorers. In a world where the mightiest of champions have fallen under the darkest star, a chosen one rises in even the tiniest of patches, where galaxies rich with plunder bring coins to heroes of patches past. This is where the meta settles. This is where the forces of good make their stand. This is a universe worth fighting for. This is patch 10.15. Let's get into it. Boop. We've got some system changes, some trait changes, a lot of champion challenges. But first,
let's talk about that intro real quick. Because it's trying to say something, right? Even in the tiniest of patches, right? Like, they're trying to, this is patch 10.15. Like, this is, we're listening, right? Is kind of like what that says to me.
I mean, it's a direct call out. I mean, it says Darkest Star,
of
right?
themselves, right? Right? And this is not the first time Galaxies has kind of found themselves in this position. I think maybe when they, anyways, let's keep going. But something I kind of want everyone to
a frame
about.
Of reference.
First,
yes.
Systems. Galaxies, new galaxies, the Plunder Planet. All champions have a chance to drop a coin on death, especially the first few. So just don't run space pirates on that map. Or maybe they give you more.
They do give you more. I saw more planet on PB.
All right. The Nicoverse has been removed from the game. I know a lot of pro players excited about that.
Yeah.
So it's just it's no longer just whoever hits the first gen wins. The Galactic Armory Galaxy has been adjusted. All players now get the same three component items rather than two completed items, which is an amazing change.
That is really awesome. That is actually really cool.
Super. Pretty self-explanatory and why that's awesome, but mostly it's just more flexibility, right? Like, the players get to play those items how they want rather than how the game wants them to,
right?
And that's awesome. And I'll go ahead and do traits just real quick, because there's only one. Celestial.
I was gonna say, going from 20, I was wondering if you're gonna say it the right way. You did
20 45 150 to 15 45 150, so a tad a bit of a nerf for that two piece, because a lot of people just slamming that two piece, especially with Ash in the late game, and it's giving them a little bit too much extra auto attacks, which leads to extra ultimates and stuff like that. So it's a good change, because no one's really running for Celestials, so they didn't really need to change that.
I wonder if that's going to be a post for 2-4-6 traits moving forward, where it's like the two trait is like super weak or like just very minimally impactful, because it's like it's kind of free, right? I mean, it obviously depends on the mishmash of champions and whatnot, but like the two splash is pretty free for the most part, especially when like Celestial or like Chrono or Mystic, where it impacts your entire team. It feels like you want the two to be very minimally impactful, and then four can be big, and then six can be something that's chaseable. That seems like it should be like really low, then like really low. Ooh, I hit my mic. Really low. Then like medium low, or maybe medium high, depending on what the trade is, and then super high for six. Not necessarily like low, medium, high, if that makes sense.
Because there's also like a lot of people are just putting in two pieces now, which is fine. I actually really like that kind of gameplay, because those two pieces are really good in terms of reacting to your lobby. There are a lot of Star Guardians in this lobby. Let me put my Mystics in just real quick, right? Or maybe let me do my four Mystics comp this time around. I like that, and I like the two splashes being impactful. And I'm not. It's funny that Celestial's the one that's getting impacted here, going down just five, but that's kind of a lot in the grand scheme of things for a two piece. So you're going to have to your Rageblade Ginsu's Ash isn't going to be keeping itself alive as easily as before, because, you know, more attack speed meant more lifesteal, yada, yada. So I think this is a good thing, but a lot of people are putting in those two pieces, and I like the way that plays out. We'll talk about, again, what that means a little bit later. Because it's definitely something I want to kind of think about. Because did people like Blender? Did people like the fact that you didn't necessarily need to chase six pieces, right? Or do you want like a solid four piece type of synergy with a bunch of other blundered type of units, which is two Vanguards, blah, blah, blah.
I mean,
right?
Yeah. I liked, if we can take apart the fact that Darkstar, because of Jarvan and Shaco, really it is slash was pretty broken. I actually liked the way, and sorcerers too actually fit the same way. It's like The two-piece is always going to be good, and you're kind of accidentally getting the two-piece a lot of time. If you're playing like anything remotely in that sort of like tree of playability, you're going to get two sorcerers relatively easily, right? So it's almost like free. And then maybe the core is four, which is strong, and it's something that you actively need to think about. Like, you can still relatively easily get four Darkstar or four sorcerers, but it's not like you're accidentally doing it, or you're really, really freely getting it. And then six is like the chase, where it's like, okay, you are making serious concessions in terms of frontline or something else at some point in the game to get the six piece in, right? You don't really make concessions in Darkstar, which might be part of the reason why it's super strong. But like six sorcerer, for instance, it's like, okay, if you're level nine, that means you have at most three frontline units and six backline sorcerers, right? And like Annie can be a frontline, and et cetera, et cetera. But like, you get what I'm saying is like, two is essentially you can get it by accident. Four is you're making somewhat of a commitment and getting a relatively strong payoff. And six is you are actively taking things like, can you run Wukong in a six sorcerer comp? Maybe, but you can't run Wukong and Gnar and this and that. Like, you're making serious concessions in terms of like generally playable units to get the higher synergy. And that, I think, is an interesting decision to make, because this, depending on the meta, the sorcerer comp isn't just always get six sorcerers and go. It's sometimes get four. It's sometimes just do two, or it's four with more frontline. It's four with Riven carry, etc. I think those are interesting. It's interesting to do that. I don't like it when it's just like, oh, well, I accidentally have four, or like
I have six Infernos and four Shadows.
Right. Or it's just like, I ignore every, yeah, like Inferno and Shadow is the same thing, where it's like, you put your horse blinders on, and it's like, if it's not Inferno and it's not Shadow, I'm not picking it. I can't pick it. I can't play it. Where those felt strong at times. But like when they were strong, it was just because of numbers, and it wasn't fun necessarily. It was just like, it was the strongest thing, so I played it and I put my blinders on it, and there was really no, the mid game kind of made a difference, but it was just like, I just play every Inferno, GG. That was more of a tangent than I was expecting to go on, but it came to me, so I went on it. Let's move on to tier one champs. Graves Smoke Amazing. Grenade blind duration is going from 2.35 seconds to 3.4 no. 6.
Okay, so I'm just going to jump in real quick here. So this is, in my opinion, one of the best counters to Shaco in the game upcoming because of this change. We've all blindly missed our shots facing face to face, as you know, against a Graves, and now it's gonna be 3 seconds at level one, 4 seconds at level two. That's a lot. That's two or three auto attacks for a Shaco. The ult, I think, also misses. So the big deal. And the other big thing about that is blasters have had a little bit of an issue this patch, so maybe bringing him in as a counter to Darkstar brings blasters up a little bit as a more direct counter. I don't know, but this is going to be very, very annoying. I might be overreacting, but 4 seconds feels really high to me.
So,
and it can be really frustrating to lose against a Graves in that way.
Yeah. In set one, we had Graves, and he was a one cost unit that was a little bit weird. He had the weird AoE spread for his attack, and that was his whole ability. But you could make the red buff double RFC Graves, and it was, what did we call it? The lawnmower? Was that what it was
called? Yeah.
Now, what if you make a Graves with Shojin? Like what? With Shojin? No, not even AP. Shojin, Rage Blade, or like double Shojin, Rage Blade. Is it all of a sudden like the leaf blower where you're shooting leaves at them the whole, like over and over again?
Oh no, with the blue buff. So it'd be like,
is he better with blue buff, or is he better with,
I think with those items, blue buff for the first cast, and then
blue buff and Shojin.
Yeah, blue buff Shojins and Rage Blade, or double Shojins, right? Just
that's so what I said. Buff, so double Shojin. Double Shojin and Rage Blade.
I added the Rage Blade with the blue buff though.
Oh, okay, sure.
Yeah, and that's gonna be super funny. And people are going to try it. It's definitely going to be a mean build.
I want it. I want it to work.
We'll see if it works, because it's going to really hamper things like Shredder too.
Yeah.
Like, it's going to be annoying.
Especially early game and mid game.
Yeah, especially early game. If you get a really early Graves 2, I mean, Poppies will be fine. Your, like, kind of Protector should be fine. But your Shredder types and your Caitlyn's,
yeah,
are going to have a hard time.
Well, and another buff that we'll talk about in the Tier 2 champions will also increase Graves' stock a little bit. But before we get to that, we've got the big one, the elephant in the room. Jarvan's Ageless Standard bonus attack speed is going from 75, 85, 95% to 50, 60, 75%. His Tier 3 now is what his Tier 1 was before. I don't know if we've seen a nerf of this magnitude before, ever. I honestly don't. Man. I don't think we've ever seen it shifted from
this was the after old tier. A hot fix.
Yeah. I don't know if we've ever seen it go from the Tier 1 version is now what the Tier 3 version is. I don't think we've ever seen that drastic of a change. Not that I can remember.
I mean, they tried their best to knock Jarvan out, and we're going to be using him more as a tank now, instead of as a utility situation, because the attack speed is still always going to be nice, right? But that's a huge nerf. We'll see what happens there. I'm not sure that even this nerf is enough to kick Darkstars out.
I don't think you want it. I don't think you want to kick Darkstars out. I think you want
Let's save this. Okay. That's like the core argument to what we're going to talk about later. So let's save it.
All right. Let's do tier two champs. Boom.
All right. Here we go. Tier two champions. Darius health, 750 to 800. Darius total mana, 60 to 50. Lucian total mana, 0-35 to 0-30. Lucian relentless pursuit damage. I feel like this ability has been touched, I think, more than a lot of other abilities have in this game. 150, 200, 375 to 175, 250 to 250 to 550.
Wow, is Rakan, right.
Rakan health going from 700 to 650. That's good. He shouldn't be ulting.
Time to go to work.
all right. Do you want to talk about tier two? Do you want to finish? Okay, cool.
Big D, Darius getting a buff in both health and mana. Again, I mean, maybe we see Space Jam come back. Darius is one. It's tough. I think it's really tough to buff or even nerf. Darius is in a really weird spot, right? Because he feels like he has, a lot of times he feels like he has no synergies. Because, like, do you really care about, oh, there's like a little spider here. Do you really care about, Space Pirate most of the game, or in most of the game, most games? No, you don't. And do you care about Mana Reaver in most of the game in most games? No, not now, because you don't have, there's only two other Mana Reavers, and one's a 4-cost and one's a 5-cost. Right?
And it's completely utility focused.
Right, and it doesn't synergize with him whatsoever. Now he's just naturally a little bit more of a tank, and he's going to cast more often. Obviously, his most compelling use is as, or at least his most fun, is as a carry, right? So, but the way that Darius carry works inherently is it's very on off. When he's on,
Feast or Famine.
He's exactly Feast or Famine. He is destroying your team, or he's doing a chunk of damage to one hero, and then it takes 1,000 years to cast another time, and he's probably dead. Now we're at least going to have, you know, if he misses that first cast, he's going to cast again earlier, and he's going to be able to survive longer. So I do like that. I just think it's really tough for Darius to be... It's really tough for Darius to be, like, a middle of the road to decent unit. He just feels like he's either nothing or everything.
I think that's fine, because that's how he is in regular League of Legends.
Sure.
In a game, and in LOR, for what it's worth. Exactly. So, like, it tracks. But I think the biggest thing here is to kind of examine how does the rest of the game have to respond if Darius is good,
right?
And I think then, let's think of the synergies that get better if Darius is better, right? Vanguard, something that we don't really see a ton of anymore.
True.
you know, Mystics, even if he goes the AP way with his items. So he being good, you have to have the balance of he's going to be eliminating some comps just based off of him being Darius, especially in the early game, right? But is the trade-off in terms of, is he expanding the options of compositions, or is he suffocating a portion of them, right?
Right.
That's the real question when it comes to Darius. I think everyone loves a good Darius pop-off. You don't like losing to it, but in terms of a viewing experience, it's probably one of the best TFT ever has had.
Yeah.
Was Space Jam. And regardless of balance or anything about it, like, that kind of stuff is good for the game. So I'm here to welcome Darius. Protector Darius, you know, with a little extra beef, without, you know, Jarvan being so broken too. There's going to be some opportunities to maybe even replace him a little bit later on if you are running protectors. So, like, people were starting to build items on him just like so he could use his ult, like double Warmogs and Bramble Vest and stuff. So with a Darius, what does that mean? Well, sorcerers might get a little weaker, you know, blah blah blah. Is a meta where Darius is good, because the only time Darius is in the meta is if he's good,
right?
Is that healthy?
Yeah,
I think yes, but we'll again, we'll talk about it a little bit later. Right. I've got these written down.
Another angle that Darius can possibly re-add or bring back in the meta is roll down comps, which we've seen very little of lately. It's been much more like
7-8-9 focused,
Right, 7-8-9 focused, or leveling aggressively to get, you know, to get to your three cost champs.
A lot of people leveling to six aggressively now.
Yeah. Three and four cost champions early. Like, that's what you want. So, like, can we open up the door for, you know, a Space Jam 3-star Darius to actually do some damage to these people who are leveling aggressively? Like, is that possible? So this definitely maybe creaks the door, unlocks the door potentially. I don't know.
I think the biggest problem is something that you said already, which is the Mana Reaver trait.
Right.
Ever since we lost Kassadin, the Mana Reaver's just like, it's like, it's a nice if you could put a Thresh in that comp. Right?
Yeah.
Because if you do run Darius, you're going to be running Thresh or Irelia if you need it for the Mana Reaver thing. Because the Mana Reaver trait is actually really nice, in my opinion.
It's super nice.
And moderately balanced, but taking Kassadin out of the game, and I'm stealing this from a player named Onclase who kind of described this to me, a European player. Just not having that extra Mana Reaver in the game hurt a lot more than just Darius, right? In terms of possibilities, Kassadin created a lot of possibilities versus a lot of the carries now taking away possibilities. And I think that's something that we need to continue to think about as we move forward. Is in my opinion, right now, and I could be totally wrong, right? I think having a team comp like Space Jam creates possibilities and is easier to find counterplay for.
Yeah.
Than some of the other stuff we have now.
Well, and the problem with Irelia and Darius is, like, they don't synergize at all either. Like, are you running Blade Masters with Darius? You technically can. Same with Cybernetics. You can. There's nothing stopping you from it, but do you want to? No, you never do. Do you want to just throw a random Irelia in your Space Pirates comp? I mean, no, you don't. And then, yes, obviously you want Thresh, but obviously everyone wants a really strong late game 5-cost unit in their comp. Like, yeah, I don't even care that he has Mana Reaver. That's just added bonus. It has nothing to do with the fact that he has
an
Mana
extra
Reaver.
Guy.
Yeah,
you know, it's just the,
he's just good.
Person.
Right. So it really feels, like you said, not necessarily specifically from Kassadin, but the fact that there's one fewer Mana Reaver, there's one fewer lower cost Mana Reaver, so it's just really, really tough to pull it off and have it be useful. And then Space Pirate is the most niche, and they've touched Space Pirate so many times, and it just never has popped off in the, like, you don't really ever want to run
two
Space Pirate
later. I'm not 100% sure Space Pirate should ever be something that you, like, go after and run unless it kind of, like, falls into your lap. If you, like, for some reason in your first, you know, couple rounds, you get three out of the four, because waiting for the game to link a little bit later is tough.
And I'm not even against that. Opinion. I think I would likely agree, because it seems like if it's just Force Pirates, if that's a really top tier strategy, that is degenerate, because it's going to snowball, right? That comp, you get it quickly. It snowballs. If it's really good to get, it's going to get better as the game goes on, and then there's no catching up because that you just have literally just more components than your opponent. So I agree with that. My problem is that Graves can be used to slot into a blaster comp, and you can reasonably play that. Jace is a good unit in general, but also is a Vanguard and can slot in. Gangplank speaks for himself. Darius is like, my most relevant trait is Space Pirate. So that's not a good spot to be.
And then there are those edgelords that love playing stuff like that, right? And giving them the opportunity, especially on something like Plunder Planet. Like, you have to scratch that itch, which is really, really nice.
Yeah. We'll talk more about the greater impact.
It's just like we and like Kasten was such an integral part of Space Pirates,
right?
Or not Space Pirates, Space Jam.
Yes,
right. To just make that work, it was the link holding that power core together.
Uh-huh.
Without it needs to be invested somewhere else. That's such a great definition of a unit that wasn't necessarily outwardly carrying you, but enabled your carry to do just that.
Yep,
and Mana Reaver was a treat that did that, and they kind of put all that power into Ezreal in his ultimate, and Thresh and Irelia if you can get those two in there. But if Darius was a three cost, I think this would be a lot easier to balance, but he's not, so now we're here. But speaking of three costs,
three cost champions, we've got Ashe. Starting mana is going from 50 down to 40. Ash is getting buffed. Master Yi armor going from 30 up to 50. Master Yi magic resist going from 20 up to 35. Nico starting in total mana going from 25-100 to 35-110. And Vayne's attack damage is going from 50 up to 55. Ash is
It's funny because Ash isn't in the graphic.
That is.
Neither is Nico, but the.
Interesting.
Ash starting mana is going down.
Starting mana. Okay, so never mind. That's not a buff. That's a nerf.
This is still a little bit of a niche build for Ash, but people have started building items on her, specifically Ginsu's Rage Blade and Shojin's in a double sniper comp that can go into Darkstar with Jin a little bit later. Mm-hmm. And basically, they're just like, oh my god, Crystal Arrow is so good.
Yeah.
Plus, you get the two the celestial trait for your snipers, which is really, really nice. And plus, Caitlyn and Vayne are both really good item holders, right? So you can kind of just wait if you want. So this is good. 10 mana is great, which means that for all of you assholes out there, put blue buff on Ash, right? It's gonna mean a little bit more.
Yeah.
And maybe it's gonna get people to invest a third item in her mana related to get to that first cast. But it takes 5 basic attacks with that Rageblade Shojin's, I believe, to cast an ultimate once you cast the first one. So this will be a 6th auto attack to start.
Yep.
And that's a lot of time, especially at the beginning as your Rageblade's ramping up.
How do you feel in general about the thought of an infinite casting Ash? Like, you get the Rageblade and the Shojins, and like, it's going to take a while to ramp up, but once it ramps up, it's like unstoppable, like casting machine.
I think that sounds a lot more fun in your head than it does on a board, especially for your opponent. Because when you lose, you want to lose either in like a magical way, like Space Jam.
Well, it's kind of magical. Crystal Arrow.
It's a lot of standing still, and to be CC'd like that explosions. is always more frustrating than it is rewarding.
I have mixed opinions on it. Actually, kind of not. I'm actually like, I don't mind if it's hard to do. Like, if it required having 2 Shojins or something in a Rageblade, I'm fine with an infinite casting Ash or something to that extent.
Well, we got really close to that with Pike.
Yeah, with Pike, and I mean, we got that with Vigor and with set 2 Zed making infinite copies of himself. Like, that dream I like a lot. I think it's a really cool thing.
But Vigor, not CC ability.
True.
Zed is fantastical, right?
And Pike also 5 cost.
Yeah, Pike is the closest maybe as a two cost, but also required a frozen heart.
Right.
And you needed...
Well, Assassin's Frozen Heart was just broken in general.
And yeah. And again, it's fantastical. It's coming, like, and staying on the board, you know what I mean? Versus the Ash era, which can definitely blend in sometimes.
Yeah.
I don't think the payoff is as much. There's definitely... I'm not saying it's not there, but it's definitely not the same as watching Darius pop a bunch of pimples, at least for me.
No, it's definitely a different... It's definitely a different thing, and now I'll never play Darius again. But I just like, not even specifically for Ash, because maybe Ash is a bad example, but like that dream, and we've talked about this before, of like, I can make this, like, it's not even necessarily good. It has very little to do with whether or not it's a strong meta thing to do, and more of like, I can put a Rageblade and two Shoujins on X champion, and I can do some crazy thing, and that's fun. That thought, or that like dream, that glimmer of hope is honestly, and I don't know if I've talked about this before, but that like thought is what initially made me lean towards TFT over regular auto chess or Underlords. Because in those games, the items are, at least, and I'm talking about Underlords 5 months ago or whatever, I haven't played or even looked at it since then. The items in that game are just like add 20 damage, or like give the thing lifesteal, or like some of the items had like semi-unique abilities, but it was not like...
Yeah, like the Eye of Scotty.
Yeah, it was never like the same impact as... TFT, and that game wasn't like built around the items like TFT is. So being able to alter and like actually have a carry that you are investing resources, aka items, in to a champion and making them not only the focus of your comp, but better than they normally would be, or better than the same version that your opponent has, outside of just the traits that they have, right? If I have in Underlords, if I have a Tidehunter and my opponent has a Tidehunter, it's the same unit and it's not doing anything different. Yes, you can have those like slightly different items to give one more armor or whatever, but like it doesn't really matter that much. But if you have a Jhin with an RFC or Infinity Edge and another item, and your opponent has a Jhin with nothing on it, those two Jhins are drastically different, right? So, you know, that coupled with the, like, you can make things really, really different and do really crazy things, whether or not they're good, I think is a core gameplay experience that differentiates TFT, and to me personally, at least, makes it more cool and fun than some of the other games, so... I'll get off my soapbox about that, but
someone that every game like this should definitely be thinking about, right? That's part of the reason why the items are more impactful in TFT. Mm-hmm. But there are so many people, right? And so maybe you'll get a certain type of meta where you get to do that, right? Or maybe some other person will. Unfortunately, the way that games' life cycles work, as the goal is to make everybody happy, some people will get left behind. And I think people like the experimenters and the innovators in TFT get a little bit left behind more frequently because of the lack of incentive, which again, we'll talk about again a little bit later.
Yes.
But other notable things here, we got some Blade Master buffs with Master Yi, his armor going to 30 to 50. That's a really, 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 really big deal. Which means that he's going to get to his ult and do some true damage.
Yep.
The other big thing here is Vayne attack damage going from 50 to 55. So going halvesies on from that nerf from before.
Yep.
Big thing earlier too, Lucian got big enough at 3. So Cybernetics have been having a hard time, and Cybernetics, I feel like, has a pretty wide player base. So we're giving them a little bit of love.
Yeah.
They're
getting put back. And I really, we didn't talk about it, but the Lucian, I mean, 550 damage on that Relentless Pursuit, like that's worth playing now, right? Like Lucian, I believe Lucian 3 got buffed a few patches ago somewhere. I don't know, remember if it was this ability damage or not, but like Lucian 3 all of a sudden is like looking pretty strong. And I feel like Lucian, and this is clearly just, confirmation, not confirmation bias, recency bias or some sort of bias where it's like, I feel like I fall into Lucian 3 way more often than any other unit, where I'm just like, I have a level 2 Lucian and then I see 2 or 3 in the next shop and I'm like, I guess I'll pick him up.
He's always been like that, which is funny. He was at 4 cost for like a hot minute, but he was at 2 cost twice now.
Yep.
And I think he was always the same way, just so good at holding items, right? So now you're going to have to, and these are the types of choices that players should be constantly forced to make in a game
right
like this, which is, do I invest in buying more Lucians, or am I going to wait for my Vayne to tramp up, or am I going to wait for Echo now? Because I can invest items on Lucian, but am I going to sell them, right? That's like a big thing, because the answer to that 100% of the time was yes before,
right?
And now with 550 relentless pursuit damage, I mean, that's not nothing, right? With on hit effects and stuff, that's going to be a big deal with I was about to say gunslingers, but blasters.
Yeah.
Right. It's that's going to matter, but you have to get there first. You're going to have to decide as a player whether you're going to push that or not, and whether it's going to be worth it.
Yeah.
Just like the cybernetic trait, I feel like always has been.
True.
All right. Are we ready for tier 4, Blevins?
Yes, we are.
I'll go ahead and do tier 5 as well, just to finish it out.
Okay.
That's cool. Jin, fourth shot damage going from 350, 500 to 4444. 4444 going to 344 to 444 and 4444. So thematic nerfs is what I like to say about this one.
No,
not
gameplay nerfs,
deal.
Thematic buffs.
Yeah, gameplay nerfs, thematic buffs. A little less damage, barely less damage at level 1.
Yeah.
56 less damage at 2. And the same at 3.
Yeah.
Jinx, I mean, attack speed on first tank down 50, 70, 100 to 50, 75, 125. Yeah, I was joking around with Crowan when that change first came in that she was shooting boogers like mucus out of her gun. She's not pretty low. Soraka wish healing 375, 550, 2000 to 325, 500, 2000. So some nerfs there. And Victor total mana going from 70 to 60. Janna starting total mana 3100, 2100. Xerath health 750 to 700. Xerath starting mana 30 to 20.
Okay. So a little bit of a hit on Xerath, which is, oh, right, Darkstar. I'm like, that's interesting. I don't remember. Oh, right. He was in the most played composition. So yes, Jin nerf, Xerath nerf, hitting more Darkstars. Yes, I like it. Soraka, getting the ever so smallest of nerfs. Jinx getting a little bit, I think. Victor getting a buff is a little interesting to me, because I think he low key has been really good for a long time and he just gets overshadowed because he's not.
Well, it's because in order to put him in, you're sacrificing kind of a lot.
You're sacrificing synergy.
Yeah, you're sacrificing a lot of synergy for like raw damage.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's okay, and that worked when we were running Source Riven with mech or something,
right?
But now it's just better to go the 6 Source Star Guardian way. It's just better. Now though,
with Star Guardian Victor though,
Victor total mana going from 70 to 60 means he'll get his first ult off, most likely.
Yeah,
he's a blue buff candidate potentially,
mm-hmm.
and I get baited into putting blue buff in everybody. I got to like really sit down and really think about the numbers on blue buff.
I think it's just
suggested on most people.
If it's, if they have 100 mana or lower, that's the raw number. If they have 100 mana, it's better to put Shojin. If it's under that, it's better to put blue buff. The actual number is not correct, but I guess it also depends on their attack speed.
Yeah, Victor total mana is not necessarily like a battle cast buff or like a sorcerer buff. It's a little bit of a mech buff, because that's where we're seeing Victor most often is in mech source comps. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, Victor has been low-key pretty, like, actually low-key powerful for a long time, and I think he's been slept on, and as we've seen so many times, even the smallest of nerfs or buffs will cause the player base to either completely adopt or completely abandon the champ. So I wouldn't be surprised if we start to see how strong Victor actually is, because people will actually play him now because he got buffed.
And then for tier five, I'm really happy that Janna's getting nerfed.
Yes.
Just a solid, literally can go into any comp. That ultimate so is good. Nutty good.
So good.
The knockup is way longer than you think. And she can get to that ult pretty quickly with the way people are building her now. Yep. And Xerath is just getting some basic nerfs that are really, really good. And I'm not sure Xerath is the one that needed to be handled here, but of all the Dark Stars that got touched, this is the one that maybe we could have waited a little while on,
yeah.
But it should still bring that comp down. Also, funny bug fix, tiebreaker should now do math properly if someone went into overtime. Love bug fixes are always, there's always comedy gold.
There's always a funny one.
Yeah. But yeah, now that we're at the end here in terms of, you know, things I want to talk about coming up is like, I do want to talk about whether, you know, having two splashes are good. I do want to talk about whether having five cost units that are good individual units mm-hmm. or five cost units that are strong within synergies is really important. And I also want to just chat about Mort a little bit. And unfortunately, he's in the position where we have to, because he's been having a little bit of a hard time recently. The community's been a little rough and complaining about, I think, some legitimate stuff. So we'll go over all that when we come back.
Yes, we will take a quick break, and then we'll be back to talk about there's no shortage of action going on at our exclusive partners, betonline.ag. Sports are slowly making their way back, and BetOnline is leading the way with the best odds and lines for all UFC, NASCAR, boxing, and soccer matches. And if you need even more, they have simulated NFL, NBA, and UFC simulations all day, every day, live on their website. Looking for something else other than sports? BetOnline has hundreds of casino games, poker games, and prop bets to check out. Visit betonline.ag and use the promo code BLUEWIRE for a free welcome bonus. That's one word, BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. Welcome back, everyone. Hope you enjoyed the break. We are now done with the patch notes, so hope you enjoyed those. But we're now going to take a little bit of time here to talk about the state of the game and some specific topics that we've gleaned just over the past few weeks, as well as from these patch notes and in the community and et cetera, et cetera. So, Boop, let's start. Why don't you start us off with a topic to chomp into?
All right. Well, why don't we start from the top, right? Which is Mr. Mortdog, the god of TFT. One of my favorite devs that I've ever interacted mm-hmm. with, just in general. Just going to put that out there. And I think he's having a little bit of a hard time, and this is why. Recently, the community has been pretty upset about how they've handled patches. The patches have been super swingy over the last month or two, mm-hmm. to where you get good at something, that you're just going to have to learn something completely different a little while later. Of course, there is that argument of, well, you're a pro, you should learn everything anyway, but we'll talk about that. And then through some interactions on Twitter, Mort mentioned about how hard is how hard it is to be open and honest when
right.
you do make a patch like this and you feel like you're not changing that much. And then one of the comments below is, you guys are still changing too much and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
Literally, people just aren't going to be happy, and we would literally give them there's just some people out there we would give a gold bar. And it's actual gold worth thousands of dollars.
Yeah.
And they'll be like, not good enough.
It wasn't platinum, right? Bro.
Yeah, it wasn't platinum. Not my favorite precious metal. Okay. And I think that's just the type of person that tends to be the most interactive when it comes right. to
the vocal
balance
minority.
Stuff, right? But at the same time, I think we're in a situation where we're also at a point of like, things are happening. We've got Worlds coming up. We've got competitive TFT ramping up with Giant Slayer running like four tournaments now. You know what I mean? We've got people like Team Liquid bombing some tournaments and trying to work their way up. Same thing with, you know, Cloud9 has
Cloud9 didn't miss the criticism bad either.
But Yeah, yeah. What do you think? What do you think?
In regards to Mort specifically, I think there's a couple of ways to look at it. The first, I think, and foremost, is that the community, I personally think the community needs to like understand and appreciate what we have in Mort, in that there is a reason that a lot of developers aren't as open and public about the things that they are doing. And the reason is us, right? like we are the reason that that doesn't happen. And Mort has taken it upon himself because he is a genuinely passionate person about gaming and about game design and about TFT and about the community that, you know, his MO is, if I were, you know, playing a game competitively, or I'm paraphrasing and I'm paraphrasing what he's said specifically. You can watch our interview of Mort back from the beginning of the year to see what his actual direct thoughts are. But to paraphrase, if I were playing a game like TFT right now, as a fan, I would love it if the devs were as open and honest as I am, essentially, mm-hmm. is what he's saying, which I agree.
I totally agree.
Absolutely, and love it.
We've talked about how dangerous that could be for him. Mm-hmm. Like, I think at many, many, many times, right? Yeah. That's just like, you open yourself to that interaction, you're opening yourself up to this, right?
Yeah.
Like, and with the way the internet works, it's inherently going to be negative right now, right? Yeah. There aren't going to be, and the positive feedback is never the positive feedback is always in response to, it's never just given, right? Anytime Mort gets like any positive feedback, a lot of the time it's in response to a negative comment.
Yeah.
Right. It's not like, oh, I like you, Mort. Right.
Yeah.
It's, and I think that can be really, really hard for a lot of people. And
yeah, just humans in general.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And we need to, again, appreciate it. But if he's going to be open, he has to understand, which I'm sure he does, that if we don't like what we see, then we've opened up that dialogue, right?
And some people are going to go both ways.
Yeah, some people are going to be better at talking about it than others, but that's just a decision he made. And that, unfortunately, at this point is either, you know what, I'm just going to stop, you're going to get patch notes and that's it, or you're going to stay in this. I don't really believe there is a middle ground anymore, right? It is the point of no return, in my opinion, when it comes to that. And I hope he stays open, because I really do appreciate everything that he does. And the man is a guy, the guy plays the game he makes, right? Like,
right.
As someone who has been in the game dev space, like, I don't think you guys understand how rare that actually is, for a dev to actually play that game. Think about it as if you're like a waiter at a restaurant. A lot of those waiters stop eating at the restaurant they work at just because it's always there. Right. But his job is literally what brings him joy. And I think we as a community have hurt that. And that's where I want to be better in terms of us as a community.
Yeah.
Right. Let's not take the joy out of the game. Right.
Yeah.
And it's really important that just because we're not joyful or prideful about it right now, doesn't mean that we have to make sure that they're not having fun, because he obviously really likes it. He talks to us. He tries to change. You know, we said this comp cybernetics too strong. Well, they gave us Dark Stars, and that might've been the wrong choice. And maybe they responded to Jarvan a little bit too slow, but they're actively always changing. But the biggest problem here is when is that an excuse versus like giving them a little bit of leeway? Right.
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things at play. One is the way the channel of communication exists is inherently going to lead to toxic perceptions at best. I think the channel is one to many and many to one, and that many is not homogeneous at all. I'm using a lot of syllables and jargon here, but I promise it's for a reason. I'm going to make up an example here. Don't take it for anything that's actually happening. So let's say Mort and team, because we're not like Mort is the representative of TFT in a lot of ways, and he represents the team in general, even though it's obviously not just him, but he kind of takes it. So it's one to many. So the team, let's just use Jarvan as an example. The team releases Jarvan 2 weeks ago, and he's super broken, right? The first either report or just comment comes in, hey, Jarvan's really strong. Okay, that's great. I'm glad you guys pointed that out. We'll look into it. And, you know, we understand that, you know, we tested it, didn't quite get there in our testing, but we see what you're saying, and we appreciate that. Thank you. Now multiply that by hundreds, if not thousands of times, and even an innocuous statement of, hey, Jarvan is really strong. When you've heard that 900 times, it stops being less of, oh, well, thank you for your feedback. Even if you are being as banal as possible, it is going to feel like a personal attack after 900 times.
So let me give you a personal example of that. Okay. So as a caster, I have been, I've interacted with some awful people. The reasoning is, it's like the little amount someone needs to have to say something like kill yourself is crazy on the internet.
Yeah.
I talked a little bit about it a couple weeks ago, but a lot of people talked about my voice, something that like I could not change at that time, right? I'm still training. Like when I try to cast down here now, you can hear a quality difference, right? But at the same time, it's like, oh, this dude's face, shave your face, blah blah blah. We as people get that all the time.
Fighting words, by the way,
right? Like that, you know, I hear shave your face and I'm like, okay, like what, my six hairs that I have on my face, right? And that's fine. But after hearing, oh, this kid's voice is so gay, oh, why would anyone want to listen to this,
right,
hundreds and hundreds of times, right, I almost gave up casting because I thought people just didn't like my voice. And then I like really looked into it, which I shouldn't have, but part of me is kind of happy I did. Like, who was saying this? And I realized it was like the same three people.
Yeah.
Like just kind of echo chambering off of each other on Reddit and in Twitch chat, right?
Yeah. Yep.
And so, but I almost quit because I just heard it so often.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad I didn't. And I had the support of my friends and people helping me with that kind of thing. But that stuff hurts.
Man. Yeah.
And even something like you said, as innocuous as Jarvan sucks, right? It's like commenting on someone's parenting. Any parents out there, right? When someone's like, you should do this for your kid, or your child is behind,
right?
That's like a personal attack. And that's what you're doing to Mort's child. You know what I mean? Who can't technically defend itself.
Right.
It's a computer.
So that is certainly part of it. Another part is again, going to the channel and the one to many, there's also the differences in the channel is also an expert and implementer and professional to random channel, and then random to that. So like it's random, but also like people who think of themselves as professionals or are armchair professionals, right? So it's like Jarvan sucks. Jarvan sucks. Okay. And then it's just silence, right? It's like, well, how do you fix them? Well, some people make really long and elaborate posts about how they might fix it. And those, I think, are interesting conversations to have. But if it's just like, Jarvan sucks, you're a terrible designer. Okay.
People have forgotten what burden of proof means.
No, I feel like people just either never knew or just choose to disregard it.
Yeah, because like when you, in debate, right, this is a debate term, burden of proof. When you say a statement like Jarvan sucks, you are the one that must provide the detail as to
right
why. The onus or the burden of proof is on you to prove that, not the other party,
right?
Because it's your statement, right?
Right.
It's unfair for you to go Jarvan is broken and then expect the other person to do all the research to just, and you know what I mean, to accommodate 100%. Your statement. And that's not just a gaming thing. That's a life thing.
Yeah.
Like just like saying statements thing. Like this is this. And it's like, well tell me why.
Yeah.
Like just to be frivolous and saying something for the likes and the interactions. Right. I understand why people do that. And I understand metrics. We're in the world of social media too, inherently in the world.
And also people are literally 13. That's another thing that like I'm not even saying that as a joke. That was a thing that actually really hit home for me in my like evaluation of how people act on the internet. Cause I'm like, and I don't want to go into a whole thing, but like seeing how this is a really bad example, or it's a really horrid example. But people harassing each other on the internet, right? And I look at it and I'm like, who would ever say that? That's so stupid. And like, it's such a like trivial, like you would say this if you didn't know any better, if you were like 13. And then I'm like, oh, wait, these people might literally be 13. And like, that doesn't excuse, it doesn't excuse anyone in the process at some point. But like conceptually, if this is your first time on the internet and your parents never or whomever never gave you that framework of how to act on the internet or anonymously or show you like give you that responsibility or imbue upon you that responsibility, it would make logical sense why someone might think it all right or just not care or not care about the ramifications of saying something awful on the internet to someone. Because I, as a boomer 30-year-old person on the internet, I don't see the value of it to me. I don't think it's funny. I don't think any, like, I don't understand why someone who is like me would ever do that. But there are people who are literally 13 years old who don't know any better that do this. So, and again, I'm not excusing that at all. I think it's on us. It's on them and us as a community to educate people in that. I'm just using it as an example.
Yeah. And 13-year-olds can be crazy talented and understand this kind of stuff. I've worked with a 15-year-old who had like just insane amount of talent in music. Yeah. Right. And I would respect his opinion a little bit more.
Sure.
But like, we're not saying, hey, if you're 13, you don't get an opinion, right? What we're saying is everyone's opinion is valid, right? But unless you actually tell me what, I think everyone gets to have an opinion.
Okay, yes, that I'll give you that.
Everyone gets to have
an opinion. It is valid that everyone has an opinion.
If you leave the burden of proof on the other person, there's no reason why we need to respond to you, right? Like, that's just not necessary.
I just want to say this real quick. The thing I found myself saying the other day actually was, I respect that everyone has an opinion. I don't respect everyone's opinion.
And that's the thing about Mort that like is a little bit of give and take, right? Is this is a little bit of a dark time. It's not really that fun right now, to be completely honest with everybody, right? I think most people can say, and this brings me to my next subject, which is the reason why. In my opinion, even though Mort did say, oh, you know, making such a big patch and then leaving, not a great idea. Yeah, probably. But, you know, you got to take your vacations, and this just happens to be where it was.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you took a vacation because, I mean, if you didn't take a vacation, you got this kind of feedback, you might not have been as prepared to deal with it. Right. But the moral of the story is, I was speaking to Anclase again, he just won Fight Night Rising last week, and he was just like, half the units just suck. Like, just the units suck. There is no, like, synergistic thing that brings them up. It's just, there are good units and bad units, and when your 5-cost units, like Janna and Echo, can just be put in whatever comp, right, and inherently makes all of the other units worse that don't go into those comps.
Right?
So what do you think of that in terms of balance? Like, because we've had places like where synergies have been a little bit broken, but I think I would rather that than having just half the roster be unplayable according to the highest level of players.
It's a really fine line to walk, because the one extreme is what we're in now, where it's like, well, I open a Janna, I play a Janna. It's that simple. I don't care what comp I'm running. I can be running anything from Star Guardians to Brawler Blasters. Like, it doesn't matter, right? I'm going to play this Janna. I don't care, right? Same with Thresh, less so Urgot, but you get the point. You get the picture. Old Gangplank was like that. Old Misfortune was like that. I'm going to make the room for the 5-cost. And that was a stated goal for this set, was we want 5-costs to feel impactful in any given situation, not just the ones where they fit your synergy. So I think it, as a stated goal, that is a success. Now, is that stated goal a good thing for the game? That's the question we're asking. And I'm going to preface this with, I don't know the answer. I lean towards, I want the five costs to be good. Do I want the best comp in the game to be as many five costs as I can get, and then whatever leftover, like four piece synergy, I'll play that. No, I don't want that. I don't think that's the correct, I don't think that's the most fun thing. But what I don't want is every five cost to feel like Aurelion Sol did a few patches ago, where it's like, if I'm not running the most committal of rebel comps, Aurelion Sol's unplayable. If I'm not an old like Kale in set one, it's like, if I'm not running what were they called? Not light nobles. If I'm not running nobles, Kale is just kind of really lackluster. I mean, Kale could still be all right, but it's like just kind of a lackluster comp. Or like what we were talking about earlier in the show is like, nine infernos or six infernos is what I'm going, and I put my horse blinders on and I just pick the inferno units and let me get my Amumu and whatever. I think actually Amumu is probably a pretty good example of like, he's pretty good in general, or maybe even a little bit too good in general, and then also really good in the synergy, right? So maybe
I think five cost units should definitely have a little bit of independence, right, in terms of their power budget, because they're expensive, right? But I think one of the best examples was actually Lux back in the day of Rise of the Elements with seven cost, and the effect that she would have if you played well as a seven cost unit, right? Being flexible because of the elements, but also having an ability that kind of just works, right? But you get enhancements based off of what team comp she was in, for example, right? I really liked that. And I do think like characters like Kale need to come back, because the trade-off we got was Riven, which was like a non-traditional type of carry. And it really seems like people want at least two auto attack based carries in the game. Going back all the way to set one with Jinx Draven, set two with Rangers, and then this set with snipers, or Jinx already getting buffed after getting nerfed, right? Like, I would have been fine with less Jinx moving on, but we needed to help blasters out. But it's very interesting.
It is, and I think it's a fine line to walk, and I'm glad that they're testing things out, and I think that the community input is important, but not the end all. I think like I have to look at this objectively as a success in some ways. Like, you had a stated goal of, we want five cost champions to be playable outside of their synergies. That is that successfully happened, right? Now take a, peel a layer back and say, should that be a success? That's a question to find out. And I think there's a really fine line of how strong, like, there's two power levels, right, that you can look at. There's inherent power level, and then there's synergy backed power level, where like Aurelion Sol at times had low inherent power level, high synergy power level, and then they kind of just increase. Like, you usually don't decrease the synergy power level, you just increase or decrease the inherent power level, and maybe you need to shift the synergy power level like up way more. And like if it's on a 10 scale, maybe five cost should be a 10 synergy level and like a 4 or 6 or something inherent power level, where like a 6 is going to be good, but something like a Wukong, who maybe has a 5 inherent power level, or like who has a 7 inherent power level and like a 5 synergy power level, you have to make the decision of, do I want to play this Wukong, or well, maybe Wukong's not a good example, but you get what I'm saying, where like you want to have something like a I'm trying to think of like an Inferno unit, which has like a 2 inherent power level, but like an 8 synergy power level. So you have to decide, do I want to play the 5 cost who's a 6 inherent power level versus the synergy power level of an Inferno unit that's like an 8 or something like that. That was a really long and complicated way of saying what I meant. So I hope that made sense, but it made sense to me, I think. There's multiple, and there's even more knobs than that to adjust, but I think at a high level that makes sense.
Of course. Games really come down to a series of choices, right? And if you provide too many choices, that's a problem. Unless you are kind of billing yourself as like a Dota, which is just a hard game. You know what I mean? Right. Like, Dota 2 is not trying to say that it's an easy game in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
Right? Like, Dota 2 is tough. It's, in my opinion, the hardest MOBA. There's so much. You deny your own creeps. You go after their creeps.
Is anyone
you
arguing
can deny your own
that?
Towers. Then you can use, like, a vision thing. And then there's a Baron and Roshan that does other, you know, like, so much. And that's not where TFT needs to be. So that's where I think the balance does. And the interaction between characters and synergies is all comes down to choice, right? What kinds of choices and how many different choices do we want to offer? And I think the kinds of choices we're making right now in this meta just aren't as fun as they have been in the past. Because the choices are becoming stale and similar in nature. There isn't enough. Even if we were to innovate, Dark Stars right now, I think, are just too strong. I mean, level one Jhin, you didn't even really need to tier two a lot of these units. If you were able to get all the components, you could top four it. Right. And that's just not a comp should never really be that strong to where, oh, you know what? I'm just not going to innovate because I only even just need the tier one units, you know? So it's, I think that's where a lot of the issues are. Plus with the five cost units being so individually powerful, which I really, really like. I just think we need to adjust that a little bit closer to kind of synergies a little bit more, because then you just make some of the rest of the units not matter as much, because they've stated specifically that they want five cost units to be fantastical. Mm-hmm. They want them to be their own thing that you can kind of plug and play, because that's the power budget that they've been given.
Yeah.
And if they want to do that, then we got to think about synergies and other ways to interact with that just a little bit cleaner or more polished.
Yeah. I also think even taking back the meta, like going even a step higher, I think part of, and again, we've touched on it before, so I won't go too deep into it. Part of the, like, what will make the experience of players lesser or greater is the opinions, the stated opinions of streamers and content creators, right? And then the echo chamber that goes from that. Was Gangplank the most broken thing ever that one patch? Maybe. Was there counterplay to him? Probably. Was it ever going to be explored? No, at least not in a constructive way. I think part of this is because, again, like we've stated on many occasions now, lack of incentives, though we do have some now with Worlds and the tournaments. It's a separate issue on how those were run, etc. But the other thing is, it is just in general really hard to balance a game. And if we consider each like meta of TFT like a different game, like TFT patch 10.15 will be its own game. It is very hard to balance any game in a way that after playing that game 300, 500, 1,000, 10,000, 100,000 times, that it is as fun as it was the first time, or as actually diverse as the meta was the first time you played it, right? Because you're exploring. Part of the fun of these things is figuring out what's good. It's a, you know, something I learned the sort of the hard way, because I used to live above a hobby store, is we would myself and my roommates who lived at the store and also worked at the store would have people come in and they'd want to play these, you know, Magic was the big one, but like these tabletop games. So something like Settlers of Catan, right? It's a really great gateway game into Euro style games. And I'm sure many people who are listening have played it, right? Well, have you played Settlers of Catan 150 times? If you have, then you probably know where I'm going with this, where the game is kind of solved. And it's not fun playing with the same people, or even any of the same people, or playing with someone who has played 150 times. That game and those games in general, tabletop games, are not designed to be played 150 times. Chess is a really great example of a game that is very, very, very complex and has lasted and is infinitely complex, but it's still very hard to get a good game of chess with random people, right? Settlers of Catan and all of those other games, like they're fun because of the variety and they have a lot of options that you can make. But when you play, if you play your favorite game, if you play Betrayal at the House on the Hill, which is another tabletop game, which I recommend, by the way, it's a really fun game.
Great. It's a great game.
It's a great game. If you play all of the scenarios in there and you've min maxed, like, oh, this is the giant snake one. We need to get to here, 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 and here. We need to max out on these quests, or like, even if it's just like, I don't know which scenario I'm going to be in. It's like, I just need to max out agility. That's the only thing that matters, which that the game's no longer fun. If one person is just doing that and everyone else is like exploring and finding and you're getting the lore and the feel of the house and you're building, and it's super fun to play that game the first time, even the first like 30 times you play that game, because there's so many different options. But if you sat down and if we had online Betrayal at the House on the Hill and played it as much as TFT games are played, people would hate that game after a week. Mm-hmm. It's not fun anymore.
Yeah. I had the same experience with the Battlestar Galactica game.
That's a great game, by the way.
Yeah. Which is a game that will ruin your friendships. There is no, like, if you ever play Battlestar Galactica, like, seriously make a deal beforehand that, like, whatever you say during the game, it does not affect anything outside of it.
I may or may not have ruined a relationship with a former significant other because of that game.
Like my husband lied to me for 6 hours and I was pissed. It was our first time playing. And basically, if you're not aware, someone's a Cylon They intentionally, like, what's the word? Not fabricate. They intentionally, like, mess up the things that you're trying to do as demons as you're trying to get to Caprica. And
it's kind of like a mafia type.
Yeah.
Game
it's a hidden identity game.
Yes. The mafia members an alien and is screwing over the rest
and
of the
game. I love hidden identity games.
Same.
Right.
They're
so
very fun.
I'm like all in it. It's like three of our first times. And my husband, John, is teaching us how to play. And he was a Cylon from the very beginning of the game.
Yeah.
While teaching us how to play, and none of us knew it was him. not a single one. And when he flipped that Cylon card over, my friend literally got up. He's like, I need to take a walk. Because when you go after something for 6 hours and then just get effed over by Cylon on like the last turn to die, and that was like the whole plan, man, that can affect your friendship. But anyway, even that gets to a point where you played enough times, you kind of understand how it works.
Yeah.
Right. And then I don't play for the board game anymore. That's the easy part. I kind of just play to see, you know, which one of my friends is lying to me right now.
Yeah.
Right. Because the politics is nutty in that game.
Super fun. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. And it transfers over to here for like a similar type of thing with TFT.
I think,
which is eventually you just play a lot of Darkstars because that's the best way right now.
Well, I think it, in Magic, again, is the same way. And I think over the years, I would imagine if this were a thing that was studied, which I'm sure it wasn't, if you kept track of like the satisfaction rating of how people are feeling about Magic the Gathering, like high level events, I would imagine if you asked in 1998, maybe not specifically, a random year in the first half of Magic's 30-year career, I bet the satisfaction rating is probably a lot higher than a tournament player now. And I think it might only be slightly impacted by the actual balance of the cards. I think if we had the coverage and online capabilities and the production and the promotion of events in 1998 that we do today, I think people would have been complaining about Psychotog decks back then just as much as they're complaining about insert top meta deck today. I know we're going off on some jargon for things that people have no idea what we're talking about, but I promise it makes sense. I think that it's an inherent thing in games, and it's a really, 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 really hard thing to do. And I think that's why games like Melee and games like Brood War have such accolades, is that they got it, at least in some capacity, right? But especially when you're changing a game every week or every other week, by design, it is really hard to make a game that is completely balanced and fun and all of this after after gameplay 100,003, right? Especially when there's also the added echo chamber of streamers and content creators and the unwillingness to adapt and the lack of incentive to innovate. So long story short, I think it's something that is very hard to avoid. And because of that, you just need to be mindful and cognizant of that as a player that, hey, if you are playing TFT 8 hours a day for 2 weeks and you're having fun, that is a statistical, like, not an anomaly, because you can have fun doing a lot of things, but like, if it feels fresh after that amount of time, they did something extremely right. Not if it doesn't feel like that, they did something extremely wrong. The inverse is not necessarily true, and I would argue is not ever true, if that makes sense. So I feel like I've been talking for an hour in this last however long I've been on this rant, but
it means that you're passionate about it. And I think it's worth talking about it because the other big thing, we don't have a spectator mode, right? Like, eventually we're just going to stop believing that it exists. It's getting made, right? Because there's a point where it's like, we promise it's coming. We promise it's coming. Like, is Mulan a real movie? I don't know. They keep delaying. You know what I mean? Exactly.
I remember them talking about that before Corona.
Quarantine. Yeah. And so, like, what's going on there? So, like, same kind of thing with spectator mode. It's like, we know it exists, but eventually it was just like, is this happening? Is Mulan happening? Right. And I think, like, that's the type of things that that give so much more weighted anxiety to players than maybe it should. That might not be as big of a deal to a dev. That's kind of like what I'm thinking in terms of that not having a spectator mode in terms of balance of the game and priority lists for a developer, I bet, is actually probably mid-tier below, right?
Yeah.
In terms of health for a game's economy, because that's almost esports specific, right? For a spectator mode.
Most people, especially if you think about like mobile, like how much of it is mobile, like they don't care, right? Like who even really cares? I mean, maybe they do from a, like, I want to watch my friend play and I don't want to actually play. And I don't want to use Discord to watch someone play. So that's a thing. But yeah, I would imagine it is probably pretty low priority in that regard.
But for us as people who watch and who want to see our players compete and get excited about Giant Slayer and all of this stuff, that spectator mode in terms of weight, is way heavier for us. Right,
arguably, like, the heaviest thing for us
exactly. And so and I think that's where some of like the miscommunication is just what's important for the community just inherently is not going to match what the most important thing dev wise needs to be,
right?
Because when they are working on spectator mode, just based off of, I don't know how this works, but based off of like man hours and stuff like that, like where they're going to be spread, balance might take a little bit of a hit, or art might take a little bit of a hit. You know what I mean?
Right.
So in terms of priorities, I think we as the audience just want to have fun and we want to be able to watch it, right? In terms of on its smallest scale, what they need is a working game that can maintain viewership and player base longer than they feel like that it should ever really have had, right? This is already, the fact that it's maintained its viewership on Twitch as well as it has, and has even grown over the last couple of weeks and months, is nuts to me for a game like this. It is unheard of. And we also have to remember as a community that everything they do is a reaction for a game like this. And it will always be that way because of the unintended massive success that this game had, right? This was a game mode that didn't take very long to actually put in, right? And it ended up just taking off because it was a new genre that is like crack for some people.
Yeah.
Right. And we also have to understand that everything is a reaction and they will inherently always feel behind. And if we could kind of think about it that way, that, okay, they have to have a priority list and they can't do everything at once, right? So if you want to have them adjust the way they patch, well, look, they did. And if you don't like it this way, we could talk about it again. But now shut up for a week because we did what you wanted. And you can't ask for a Fabergé egg and a diamond ring. You know, you get one for this week, and I'm sorry, we're moving on our priorities to later, right? Because even teachers and a lot of other people need to understand. That's why we have Jira and, you know, in prioritization apps.
Yeah.
Right. It's really Jira important, sucks,
by the way.
our priority as a viewer is we want to have fun, and what's keeping us from having fun? Jarvan, Darkstar. So that's what we're going to complain about.
Right.
But we don't know what the team is currently working on in terms of what we might see in a month that might make this game awesome. Right. Yeah. They're definitely working on set four. They've got to be right now. And they've got to be thinking about maybe adding some new champs, like maybe adding another casted type, right? Like,
they're not adding new champs to the set.
That's those are the types of thoughts that they have to go through that we never really have to. We have to be like, oh, I hope they get a new champs. And then we get to react if they don't.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's hard for a game dev. But again, we're getting close. We've talked about this before with spectator mode. We're getting closer and closer to that line where we are hitting that kind of emergency zone, right? Where eventually it's just, okay, we're waiting for the spectator mode. We're waiting for some support for tier two and tier three. We're waiting for, to have a little bit of a better hand in helping us with those ladder snapshots. So people who deserve to go to tournaments get to go to these tournaments.
Right.
And so that's, I think, where I would like to see a lot more change and prioritization from them, is just being like, all right, if there's not going to be a spectator mode in like 3 to 6 months, just tell us that.
Right.
That's what I want to know. Like, right now we're just getting led on, and I'm not very appreciative of that.
Yeah, no, I definitely hear and feel that, obviously, as we've been, I mean, I don't know who has been more of a proponent for spectator mode for as long as we have, but I mean, since the literal beginning, we've wanted it and we've asked about it. And yeah, you're right. We have been.
Yeah, we just had the 1 year anniversary, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So.
So, again, just be like, hey, our priority isn't spectator mode. Don't put it in the opening galaxy thing.
Right.
Right. Like, saying that's on the horizon, or we're going to work on it after set three. Right. And then not see anything about it either. I think that's the other. The other part is we don't know anything about the spectator mode. And I know Waylon, who was on here a little earlier, was like, oh, I got my friend. I'm talking to him about it. And that's great. But I want to see something.
Yeah. I obviously do as well. So, yeah, I mean, it's definitely an interesting time for sure for TFT and for the team and for balancing and for Mort and all that. So definitely an interesting spot to see it in. But I think progress is being made. I think it will take a shift on all sides, right? I think it will be a shift in perception from the community, and, which is tough to
And if I have, sorry to interrupt, but like the thing is if I have faith of any dev that's going to be able to nail it, I really think Mort can, right? Like, I'm not like for other games, right? Like, it's so funny now that I've played Valorant, I actually like Overwatch a lot more. And when they're like, hey, we're going to change this, I'll be like, I'll see it when I see it.
Right.
But like for a game like this, I know he's probably currently right now thinking about the balance of the game.
Right.
And that's something that we will forever be appreciative of. Yeah. And whether he makes mistakes or not, we know his intention is to make it better. I don't know these people who are like, what are you trying to kill the scene? No, you're not. Like, why even ask? It's like, yes, I'm trying to work my way out of a job.
Yeah, that's like, that just is the Nathan Fillion gif of the just like,
like, I don't understand where this is coming from.
Yes, the person whose success and livelihood is tied to the success of the game wants to kill the scene of the game. Are you stupid? Like, again. Literally might be 13 years old. I just have to mark it up to ignorance. So like, and things like that. So we're pushing 2 hours here. So
yeah, there are some really awesome Little Legends coming out. Take a look.
Oh my God. Yeah. There are really awesome Little Legends. I only saw the one. Do you have pictures of the other ones?
No, just the Pengu. And oh my God. It's
so good.
It is so good. Like, honestly, if not everyone is using this Pengu, if not everyone is using this Pengu, I'm going to be a little, this is by far, it's little top knot like me.
Yeah.
It's got a top knot like me.
I am still waiting for a bearded Little Legend, by the way, but I didn't buy any of the last set of Little Legends because they didn't resonate to me. They didn't look very flavorful, but this one I don't know. Have they announced how to get it? Or did they just show the art for it?
I think they just showed the art.
Okay. Well, however it is, my wallet weeps. I weep for my wallet. But we'll leave it off at that. Let us know. Keep the conversation going in the Discord again. Discord.me/Little Legends Podcast. It's the type of thing that needs to be talked about, and we love talking about it. So let us know what you think in the Discord or on the YouTube, in the YouTube comments, etc. But Boop, where can people find you on the internet when you're not here on the show?
Twitter.com/BoopasaurusRex.
No, shut up. Not even given the not Twitch channel anymore.
I'm so busy, dude. I'm so busy right now. Like, mm-hmm. I would love to stream, but right now there are some fires that need to be put out.
Sure.
That
sure.
We discussed earlier today.
Sure. But, sure.
Yeah, once those fires are put out, we will
begin. You'll begin saying that you're going to stream.
Yeah,
again?
You know what? You know, my husband and my mom and my sister all tell me this. I'm a professional starter.
Yep.
You know, like, I start so well. It's just that, like, fourth week or that, like, 6 months that I get to that I need to, like, physically put myself over the hump. But I think streaming is definitely part of that. So still working.
I hear you. I have the same problem. But you can also find me on the internet, Twitter @_Blevins, twitch.tv/TheBlevins with no underscore. Stream the show on Tuesdays there. I'm also streaming mostly Legends of Runeterra, so if you want to check that out, you can go there. But you can also find the show on Twitter @LIL Legends Pod, discord.me/Little Legends Podcast, of course, and everywhere that you can find podcasts in general, and YouTube and all that good stuff. Pretty much anywhere that you can find anything media related, you can find us. And if you can't, let me know and I'll put us there. But that is going to be it for this episode. For Boop, I am Blevins, and we'll be back in a couple of weeks when a new patch comes out. We'll be talking about more TFT. We'll see you then.